continuing our journey in Perek Gimel of Hilchos Deos, Halacha Bet. I want to actually dedicate this shiur with your permission. The Hasidim, it's very interesting. The Hasidim don't celebrate Yortzeits the same way most people do. Most people have Yortzeits, they say Kaddish, it's sad, they learn. The Hasidim, they just use it as Boker Tov, they use it as an opportunity to celebrate. Right? It's a strange thing, right? Like when you think about all the Hasidic Rebbeim, if you go to the right minyan, you can miss Tachanun half days a year, right? And you'll get a little schnapps at the end of minyan. Why is it schnapps? Oh, it's the Bugaburna Rebbe, it's the Hegaburna Rebbe, it's the Zibburna Rebbe. And I'm not making fun of this. Why do they celebrate the birthdays? Why do they celebrate the Yortzeit? Because the Yortzeit gives you the opportunity to appreciate the life that this person was and what he gave and what you still have. And that's definitely true with birthdays. And that's why in the Hasidic world, they also commemorate the birthdays, like the birthday of Baruch Shmuel, whatever. It's interesting that other cultures do this as well, right? Like Martin Luther King Day, right? Do you know Martin Luther King Day? Why it's Martin Luther King Day? Or why Washington's... Because it's his birthday, right? So, pardon? Don't know. But today is... Today is the birthday of somebody who was really special to me, and I want to tell you his story just really quickly because it really fits with what we're about to do. I had a student who, it's a longer story, but he had gotten married, and they were having tremendous difficulty having a child, and they eventually managed, Baruch Hashem, I don't know, with treatments, without treatments, but she got pregnant, and he was really a student of mine, her I didn't know as well. She was in her, the end of her 8th month, beginning of her 9th month, and she went for a routine ultrasound. And the ultrasound was fine. And for some reason that they still haven't quite figured out, 2 days later, she had a terrible miscarriage and she lost the baby. As their first child, it was just so unexpected, because one thing if that thing happens like in the 2nd month, but like the 9th month, and everything was fine, they had just been in an ultrasound. And I can tell you, like, from personal experience, that when your wife is pregnant, like, you kind of walk around on eggshells a little. You dive a little harder. You're thinking about it. You're kind of watching out. She shouldn't carry things. Because, Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And you never know. Like, things can cause other things. So when you get to, like, the end, the 9th month, you know that if a person were going to labor, the baby would be viable. Like, Yonatan was born a month early. So they were devastated. They came to Israel. And we had long discussions. And Baruch Hashem. And so that summer... they had been slated to take a vacation, and they took their vacation to come here. Anyway, that summer, like a few months later, he decided, like he was really still struggling with this, he decided that he really wanted to come to Israelite, to one of our Israelite programs. And that was the summer of 2001, and so it was deep into the Second Intifada. I mean, this was like the period of like suicide bombers and bus bombings. Almost a week didn't go by where somewhere something was going on. There were like 7 bus bombings in Yerushalayim, 2 in Tel Aviv. There were 2 mall bombings in Netanya. Just every couple of days, you were reading about this. So his mother was freaking out. She was freaking out. She didn't want him to go. And he really wanted to go. And he was really struggling with this, and she didn't really want him to go. So he called me up. We had this long discussion. I said, listen, don't get me wrong. I think it's your decision, and I think, it would be great, and it would be wonderful to do a program. But look, if it's that painful for your mother and it's that difficult... So I don't know, if you can't come this summer, so maybe next summer things will be a little calmer. In the sphere of things, like, it's your decision, but, is it worth causing your mother all this angst? I don't know, right? Fine. So he decided not to come. And it ended up, we thought being a good thing, because it turns out he was in this law job in, like, a kind of a deadbeat law practice in the middle of nowhere. And he had really been, like, struggling with this. He wasn't enjoying himself. He wanted to be sort of more active. And he got himself a great job, right, in the city that summer. And if he'd come to Israel, he probably wouldn't have gotten it. So I got this email, look, Hashem runs the world. Which was why, on September 11th, he was in the World Trade Center on the 78th floor when the planes hit. And he didn't make it out. After... the chaos all subsided, and they started to look into the stories, they found out the reason that he didn't make it out. They had actually evacuated his floor. His floor was below where he was in the second building. They saw the first plane, right? And it was below, or a couple floors below, whatever. And they started to evacuate the building. And he was like, you know, sort of on his way out. And they got this testimony from somebody who did get out on this floor. And then he realized that he had delivered something to the mailroom, like some envelope. And that there were, you know, a few guys, like Mexicans, who were in the mailroom. And they were mail sorters. And they had this loud music on. And he had, like, got in and, like, jived with them for a minute, whatever. And he was a very friendly kind of guy. And he suddenly realized, you know, they probably don't know this is going on. Because they can't hear the alarm. They're sitting in this closed mailroom in the middle of the floor. They don't give the mailroom guys the room at the view. And they have this loud music on. And nobody to report to, but just to get their mail done. They're probably still sitting there. So he decided to go back. So he went back and he went to the mailroom. And sure enough, these three guys were still sitting. They had no idea what was going on. So he pulled off their earphone and said, "You got to get out. You know, there's a fire alarm. There's something going on. Everybody's evacuating the building. The elevators aren't working." So like, wow. And then he started realizing, you know, maybe there are other people on this floor who don't know. Like, it's a huge floor. So he proceeded to go office to office. They know of at least 11 people, if I'm not mistaken, whose lives he saved. And eventually, when he had evacuated the floor, so I guess he started to get out and didn't quite make it. And only imagine, I remember I got an email from his sister, who was not only a student of ours at Israelite, but also worked here for a while. You know, he's missing, they don't know where he is, and we were sure it would be okay. And anyway, so I was thinking about our discussion yesterday. His name was Andrew Zucker, and they lived in Riverdale, I think. And I was thinking yesterday about that discussion. Like, it's all good to kind of sit here. And sometimes you get into this discussion and the question sort of hangs in the air, right? And I remember, like, Mikey was sitting here and he was trying to figure out, so how do I know that this ethics, that this good, that it comes from God, from some source? Like, I get that there could be ethics. I get that a person should be a good person. But why does it have to come from that, right? And I was thinking about his journey. And it was funny because I noticed in my Yoman that today was his birthday. I was thinking about his journey, how he felt that the way in which he was able to connect to Hashem was what fueled his life and his actions. And we had this whole discussion. Little did I know where it would lead to, right? And I think at the end of the day, when you get into that space, when you get into the space where you really believe that you're put here for a purpose, and you're actually able to get into the habit of being able to consistently ask yourself that question, which is not something that comes out of this. It's not an intellectual journey, right? I think that when you're able to make that habitual, that's really what changes your life. And for me, anyway, what drives my decision, my willingness to decide, let alone to actually fulfill the decision to make this a regular part of my life, to habitually do this, as much as you can, right? That simply comes to me from where it came from. And I want you to know, you know, sometimes people walk away from a discussion like that and they're like, yeah, you know, but you didn't answer the question. It's not that we're not answering the question. It's that that question is not meant to be answered in this format. Like, the whole principle of this place, of Israelite of Araita, is that we can share with you what our journey is, but we can't give you your journey. You have to take, and this is just one sharing. This sharing happens to be your experience of yeshiva in Israel. You're going to have lots of sharings in your life. You know, you'll get back to university, and we could have a whole debate. Like, suppose somebody comes to me and he says, you know, what kind of a roommate do you think I should look for? Right? So my automatic reaction is, well, I don't know, somebody who gets up from Minyan and learns every day. Like, that'd be good, you know? But let's say you don't do that, or it doesn't work out that way, or they snafu. There's a million reasons that could happen. And you end up with a Buddhist or an Episcopalian, and he's your roommate. So we could debate whether that's the ideal, but I can tell you that on the day that you're roomed with and sitting with that Episcopalian came into your life for a reason. Now you got to figure out what it is. He's there to share his journey. You may decide, you know, I was talking to one of our alumni, to Daniel, about he's got some serious roommate challenges in Florida and in university where he is, and he agreed with me, like, he's not going to stick with this roommate next year, but he agreed with me that this roommate, who's about as far from this, he's not even Jewish, you know, as we can imagine, but this roommate came into his life, right, to give him a piece of a journey. He needed to see that journey. Sometimes it could be that you meet someone so that you can see the life that you might have lived and recognize it's not for you. There could be a million reasons someone comes into your life, right? You have to find your own journey. But if you want to know where the energy comes from to decide to make that conscious thought process, that's where this comes from, which leads us into this piece. What would you say? Pardon? We're in Halacha Gimel. We'll get to exactly where we are in a minute.
Halacha Gimel?
Halacha Gimel in Halacha Bet, sorry, in Per Gimel. Where would you say, okay, in this version, in this English thing that I gave you, it's page 57. If you could pick the absolute highest moment of Kedusha that you could be in this world, what would it be? Like the single highest moment, like the greatest experience of Kedusha that a person could realize in this world, what would it be? Because in this question, is the Rambam personified? Pardon? Oh, having a child would be good. Okay. Okay, so it's interesting to me that you guys chap that. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim says that the highest moment of Kedusha you can reach in the physical world is literally the high point of relations. Because if you can take a physical experience and make of it a spiritual experience, right, that's as high as it gets. That's a very hard thing to do. It sounds like, you know, interesting, and it's a bracha that Hashem gives people the opportunity to do it in a meaningful way. But that's exactly the point. And that's, I think, why the Rambam goes to this place. Like, look at the top page 57, right? Remember, just to remind everybody, so in the beginning of Halacha, he says, tzarich adam shiyachaven libo, v'chol masav kulam, lidat Hashem. You have to try to direct everything to knowing, to developing a relationship with Hashem. Shifto v'kumo v'diburo, akol u'madze, everything is directed to that. So then the Rambam starts to give an example. So you would think that his examples would be, you know, that's why you should always be learning Torah. And that's why you should try to make your davening longer. And that's why, you know, have extra Shabbos before Shabbos and extra Shabbos. That's not what the Rambam says. That's easy. The Rambam says, k'she yisav yitain, right? Oh, yasem alacha litol sachar. When you do business, when you're counting your money, there are very few things that are more, I'm in this world, than counting your money. Because if Hashem really runs the world, what's the difference if you count your money? You know, like, I don't know. One of you guys wants to borrow 50 shekels. You need some 50 shekels, right? So fine. Here, mikasa sukasa. Take what's in my wallet. Better. If Hashem doesn't want me to have it back, I want it back. Right? That's an interesting discussion, by the way. The Chafetz Chaim is very makpid not to do that. But whatever, right? V'chein, right? K'sheyochal v'yishteh v'yiv'al. When a person eats, drinks, and has relations, has sex. Lo yasim b'libo lasot dvarim ha'elu k'dei le'anot bilvad. Now, this is a fascinating line. He says, don't be doing these things just to have pleasure. Now, that's a powerful line.
He says, bilvad, you still have to do it first.
Exactly. He's not saying you shouldn't get pleasure out of them. In fact, the Gemara says, if you decide to take me up on it and you decide to learn Michtav Meliyahu, maybe you want to do that with me sometime with pleasure. One of the first ma'amarim in the Michtav Meliyahu is, he quotes the Gemara, I think it's a Gemara in Verzar, but I don't remember Alper, that when we get up to Shamayim, Akash Baruch is going to ask us a few questions, right? One of the questions is, Nasata v'natata b'emuna. Did you deal honestly in business? Right? I had a Rebbe used to say, the guys in Lakewood are going to have a hard time answering that question because they don't do business. They're sitting and learning all day. Hashem doesn't ask, did you learn Torah all day? Hashem asks, did you do business? And the Gemara doesn't say that that just applies only to the guys who do business. Everybody should be able to answer that question. That's an interesting question. The second thing he says, Haneneta miolami. Did you enjoy my world? That's a crazy question. Did you enjoy my world? Well, I don't know. Doesn't that depend on you? Like, no, if I had two children born dyslexic without legs and lost my best friend here, and wife divorced me, and all this sort of stuff. So then no, I didn't enjoy the world, and it's your fault. The Gemara doesn't say, did you enjoy my world if I gave you a good life? The Gemara just says, did you enjoy my world? And there are many different ways of understanding that line. One of them is, everything that comes into this world, you have the ability to gain pleasure from. Of course, that leads you to the obvious question, which is, what is pleasure? Like, what's pleasure? Like, that's an interesting question. What is pleasure? What does it mean to enjoy something? Think about all the things. Well, you tell me. What do you think it means to enjoy something, to have pleasure? Yeah?
Appreciate it as a means.
Pardon?
To appreciate it as a means.
Okay.
One means it could be more enjoyable than another.
Okay, so let's think about this honestly. Not like what we think the Rambam is saying. But let's think about this honestly. So, In a few weeks, okay, there's going to be a Super Bowl. And the truth is, this year more than ever, it's very obvious. It's shtus. There's no point. The Giants are not in the Super Bowl. I mean, unless there's a miracle, then, right? But putting that aside, okay? Putting that aside, right? They picked the wrong name this year, but okay, whatever, right? They're not really Giants this year, but okay, right? But putting that aside. So some of the guys here, maybe most of the guys here, you know, they'll enjoy that. And, like, I respect the fact, we respect the fact that where you're coming from and where you're at. Like, when I was in Gush, they did not take a night off of the Super Bowl. But, like, okay, if that's where a guy's at, so you got to go with the flow sometimes. So Rav Sam invited everybody. He's going to come over to his house, and I'm definitely going to pop by. And whatever we do, we do. And
the game doesn't start till 1.
Yeah, no, it's just like an all-night affair, right? So we'll probably drive you in for Vatikin at the Kotel or something. I don't know. So
unless there's overtime.
Unless there's overtime, right. Then there'll be a later minute. So there's guys who are going to be sitting there, right? And they're going to be enjoying it. They're going to be having a lot of pleasure. It's going to be fun. Right? Do you think that everybody sitting there and having pleasure is saying, right, this is so awesome because this is a vehicle for me to appreciating the sugya tomorrow? Or this is making me a more ethical human being? Or I'm really at the Super Bowl game so that we can have a small bowl of popcorn and see if we can learn to share it with them? I don't want to be chaser shalom. You should be down the cuffs chus and assume the best of it. And yet, guys will be having pleasure, right? Like, you'll get hana'ah from that, right? So then what is pleasure? How do you define pleasure? Because I want you to know I agree with you.
You can take pleasure in itself and not have to make what the specific act you're doing means, but you can say that pleasure itself is a means.
Oh, okay. There I agree with you. I can be honestly telling you that if I'm sitting at that Super Bowl, and I'm like, you know, I'm a straight shooter, I don't like to play a game. If I go, like, what interests me more, like, there was a time where to miss Monday Night Football, I mean, you know, that'd be like, you know, just, I don't know, I can't even think of a sacrilegious act that even parallels that, right? That's what we would do. And I got out of that, not because I was on some high level, I got out of that because when I got to Gush, I had no choice. And you guys lose out. You should know. You gain in the short term. You enjoy. You have cell phones. You have whatever. But you definitely, definitely lose out from the fact that you don't get the opportunity to sort of libriot, to suffer in and really experience what it means to be in an island. You do lose out from that. But I guess you gain other things. But I'm not coming over to the Super Bowl as much because I love the game. Because if you guys weren't there, I would not be going over. Rav Sam and I would not be sitting up till, you know, 4:30 in the morning watching the Super Bowl together. Much as we would have a good time if we did, it wouldn't be shock. I'm over there because I value spending time with you guys. Like, that's definitely true. And I'll have a good time watching the Super Bowl, don't get me wrong. If you guys loved the fourth operetto, you know, of my knowledge of opera limits me to even complete that sentence, you know, I wouldn't be joining you 3 in the morning. Like, I wouldn't do something that I didn't think I would enjoy. But you're right. That's not the purpose that I'm there for. So then, what does that mean? Does that mean somebody who isn't thinking about what's the bigger purpose here isn't gaining enjoyment? So I'll, yeah. Anybody want to suggest? Because guys are having fun. And yet, that's not our definition of.
Actually, can I bring something up?
Yeah.
Super Bowl, like, personally, like it's just not personally, like, I don't think anything bad people like about football. Me personally, like, I'm not into, like, football. I find it just, like, completely boring. Like, I really don't care about a bunch of big guys in tights, like, running around.
Rob, so what sport do you play?
I usually like to just do my own thing, like run on my own. I used to box.
Okay.
I don't really want to.
But wait, one second. That's okay. So you'll be having a different experience that night, which is fine. You don't have to go. We're definitely not making the Super Bowl mandatory. But the question.
We're all having a Super Bowl party.
The question.
Yeah, no,
Bezetter. There's not going to be sheer that night. Let's put it that way. But the question stands, what's the difference between the guy having a really good time, having a lot of pleasure, who's not thinking about the purpose, and the guy who is? Like,
well, I don't necessarily have an answer to that, but I guess I just have, like, some ideas of, I guess, what pleasure isn't.
Okay.
Like what Rob was saying, not everyone would enjoy watching football. Like, I don't enjoy watching
right.
either, but someone else would definitely not enjoy running.
Right.
And also the same with different foods. Like, some people enjoy, like, if you say that eating food or, like, certain things, like, activate pleasure inside your body. That's not even the case. Like even if you like pizza, if you're stuffed and you eat a piece of pizza, not only will you not enjoy it, like, you'll be sick. So I guess there's got to be something more than whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it can't be something inherent in what you're doing that causes pleasure.
Okay.
Does that mean it's subjective?
Yes. We've had this discussion already.
Not sure that's true. I think you can come up with the definition of a definition.
No, I think you can come up with an objective definition of what causes the enjoyment. But I'm saying, then,
oh, different people's enjoyments. Sure, I don't enjoy playing violin. I enjoy listening to it. Right?
Everyone to enjoy.
Okay. So imagine this. Imagine. Imagine. Right, we're not talking about burgers. That's a different madriga. People who don't like burgers, it's just that's a deficiency. It's a mental illness. It's okay, you know, whatever. That's a different discussion. But understand. What's the fundamental difference? So Rav Dessler says, like, what is hana? That's the language in the Gemara. What's hana? It means to gain pleasure, but what does that mean, right? So the hana, like most people think, like, how do you have a good time? How do you have pleasure, right? Well, if you have a lot of money. But you meet people who have a lot of money who are not happy. Right? We're not, they don't, right? They might be having fun, but they're not happy. Right? Any working definition that you could think of, you know, there are plenty of people who are experiencing that who it's not giving them real pleasure. It's not gonna, so how do you explain that? So there's two things I think that are worth thinking about. One is that I think that there's a difference between fun and pleasure, or hana. Okay? Hana is a word that you actually find. Fun is a word that you don't find in Judaism. There is no, right? There is no, in fact, even the Hebrew words. Everybody know what the Hebrew word for fun is? Kef. Kef is an Arabic word. Kef halak, right? It's not a Hebrew word. There is no, the Torah does not use the word fun, which means that fun to some degree is an illusion. It's temporal, right? And if you think about it, the difference between fun and pleasure, right, is exactly that. Does it last? Like, if I take pleasure in learning with my children, I think, it's because that activity is so imbued with purpose and its pleasure so lasts, right, that it's very different from fun. Now, what makes fun into pleasure? So this is what somebody was saying. Sometimes, look, we went to the beach for a day at the beginning of the year, right? And I had a lot of fun, but I also had a lot of pleasure. The fun was what didn't last, and the pleasure was what did. Because the pleasure had a larger purpose. If by the end of that week we knew each other better, and if there was a value to that, you might discover the people you got to know you didn't want to know. But if you discovered that there was a value to that, right? So then that lasts, right? And that's, I think, what's going on here. The Rambam does not say that you're not supposed to enjoy it. This is a mistake that people make. Sometimes people think that because I'm supposed to be thinking of a higher purpose, if I'm actually enjoying this moment, then I'm not imbued with a sense of purpose. Like, I shouldn't enjoy it. You know, I'll eat the food because it's important to eat, but I don't want to enjoy the burger too much because I'm in Olam Hazeh, and I don't want to enjoy Olam Hazeh, and I want to be about spirituality. That's not what the Rambam's saying.
He's saying you should enjoy it?
He's saying you should enjoy it because Hashem gave you that gift to enjoy it.
But it's not all out of pleasure?
What you get to do is consider why you're enjoying it, and whether its enjoyment has lasting value. Like, for example, there's a huge difference between eating a burger on your own, right, and eating burgers around the table with a lot of other guys. Because one of them, by definition, can have much more purpose. On the other hand, if you're eating a burger on your own because you need some air and you want to think about something, that could also be good. If you're eating a burger because it gives you strength because you can just have a good day or you're having breakfast, so then the breakfast isn't about whatever, yeah, right? Isn't about, pardon?
On Sunday, you buy burgers for breakfast to be yeshiva.
Burgers for breakfast.
I like this idea.
You like this idea?
I like this idea.
Breakfast burgers. That would be a new idea. Burgers for breakfast. I'm going to think about that one. I'm going to seriously consider. I want you to know that you have reached a new level that a writer has never reached before. The contemplation of burgers for breakfast, it's just a whole different level. And I didn't realize until now that this year's boys are just on a higher level. And now I realize you've gotten somewhere very deep to be able to... most people are not on that madriga. So I'm going to think about that. I don't know if I'm up to that madriga, but hey, Rafi.
I think that only works like a late breakfast. If someone eats a burger or someone eats a loaf of bread, within 10 minutes after, like, you don't taste anymore, it's in your stomach, it's going to feel the same. So, I mean...
Okay. What would make one a more valuable experience in the bigger picture than the other. Like eating a burger with fries, like really good fries, as opposed to a piece of whole wheat bread. And let's assume that the whole wheat bread has the equivalent, well, whatever, it doesn't matter. Yeah, what would be the difference? This is not complicated.
One tastes better?
No. Yeah, one tastes better, but okay, to you, fine, yeah, so. But on the other hand, pardon? Oh, so now it gets interesting. So I can eat one burger that tastes much better to me, or I can eat a certain amount of whole wheat bread with carrots that is much healthier for me. What determines protein? But you got the bun and the fries. What makes those two? What makes those two different?
The amount of enjoyment you gave me. The burger's a special place in my heart. A whole wheat bread cannot fulfill. I had Burger Mart several times when I was here because I just can't buy it the rest of the year. Or I would. And because I can't buy it this year, it's very special. I gave a severe amount of spiritual enjoyment from eating that burger.
Okay. You can't argue with that. Yeah. You want to say something?
Yeah, I think that the burger is delicious, tremendous. So like Rocky said, it's gone in like 3 minutes. But mm-hmm. the whole wheat bread, like, so you it's lost because you know that you chose the maybe less tasty whole wheat bread over white bread, but now you can run it off easier.
Have you ever like had a Burger's Bar burger and then walked by Burger's Bar and gone back to that moment where you're eating a Burger's Bar burger?
Yeah.
Let me get this straight.
That's that moment lasting.
I just want to understand this. So you're walking by a Burger's Bar, and you're taking a moment to remember the moment that you had a burger.
In Burger's Bar, like you can smell all the sauces,
yeah,
and all the burgers. And yeah.
Okay, I'm in pain for you. I just want you to know, but okay. Wow. Let me get us somewhere, yeah.
I think there's definitely like the difference between the burger and the whole wheat bread is yeah, the burger tastes better, but because of that, it can generate much higher pleasure. Like you wouldn't, if your friend was coming from America, you wouldn't take him out to eat whole wheat bread. You take him out to eat something like special, something more than usual, so that you would be able to, like you're saying, like if sex is the highest physical pleasure, then you can take it to the highest spiritual level. So if a burger tastes better than wheat, you use it for.
Here's what I think you're saying, which is my answer to the question. I think you're right. Okay. I think that. They're two similar but very different experiences. One person, now you might find a psychotic person who just loves eating plain whole wheat bread. We wouldn't accept him to a right there, but whatever. Oh, I guess we did. What are you gonna do, right? But if you're eating a burger because you had a tough day, and you realize that if you treat yourself to a burger and just sit and have a burger, that you'll just enjoy that and it puts you in a better space so you can come back to the basement and learn, then that burger has a whole different level of value. And on the other hand, if you're eating whole wheat bread, and you don't really like whole wheat bread, but you're eating that whole wheat bread because you want to be healthier, and maybe it's important to someone who loves you, like, you know, one day when you're married, that you be healthier, then that eating experience has a whole different level. And that's what the Rambam is suggesting here. He's not suggesting that you shouldn't enjoy. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu puts burgers in front of you, there's no. The Torah doesn't say it's usher to eat burgers. The Rambam is going to get into very soon a whole long sort of dietary plan. Why does the Rambam get stuck in that? Because the Rambam's trying to teach that the physical world has its value, but you have to decide how you channel, how you utilize the physical world to achieve a higher purpose. That's all. And that's true with everything. Right? You're sitting at a desk. This desk could be, you know, a desk that you use for gambling over cards, or it could be a desk that you use for learning Torah-based Midrash. It's just a desk. But you change the nature of that desk. Right? And that's true with every physical experience in this world. And by the way, if you think about it, like, sometimes you can learn this from extremes. Right? Like, imagine you have, I don't know, a Rav Nevenzel. So Rav Nevenzel, I mean, you know, you're not supposed to talk about these things, but for the purpose of this discussion, I'm going to take a risk. Rav Nevenzel has children. That means that he experienced certain things that hopefully you guys haven't experienced yet, right? But because he's a Rav Nevenzel, right? So I imagine that he was able to take that, because he's very aware of the Rambam, to take that physical experience and make of it a gift. But it doesn't mean he didn't get pleasure from it. It means that it became a gift in the enhancement of his relationship with his wife and with Hashem. That's a very hard thing to do. It sounds easy. It's a very hard thing to do because the physical world tends to envelop you. You become immersed in it. If you can stay above the physical world to the degree that you can still enjoy it, there's nothing wrong with enjoying it, but you can nonetheless channel it, right, as a gift, as part of your bigger purpose, that's amazing. Now listen, when God forbid, and we'll all have, don't forget your thought, and we'll all have these experiences, you know, God forbid, you know, I call them mountains and valleys. You know, you get off a plane, and or maybe it's a Wednesday, you just landed in Israel, and you're sitting on a beach in Eretz Israel, and you realize you're going to be here for a year, and you're with these guys, and it seems like they're all great guys. That's like a mountain. Like, when you think about the path of Jewish history for the last 2,000 years, like, that's just a mountain. You know, you're standing on the rooftop of this building, and it's the end of Ne'ilah, and the fast is almost over. And that's the point where, like, for whatever the moment is, everybody has this moment, right? Where the hunger isn't bothering you, and you're not stuck in the space of how long the day is, and you're just in the moment. Like a kotel singing nativity, that's a mountain. But you're also going to have valleys. You know, like, Bezrat Hashem, Kosh Baruch Hu should grant us that the sphere of life for all of us is a healthy fashion. It means that our parents, lo aleinu, will they'll pass from this world before we do. Like, everybody at some point sits Shiva. That's a valley, right? If you wait until the big issue, the big valleys, to struggle with these types of questions, that's very challenging. But if every time you have an opportunity to transform a valley into a mountain, if every time you have an opportunity to turn this world into a partnership with Olam Haba, then it becomes much easier when the big things come along. So, like, you know, it's worth taking a moment. Like, I love a good cup of coffee. And I'll sometimes take a moment and just, you know, breathe for a second, just appreciate what a gift it is to sit with you guys and have a cup of coffee. It's a simple thing. Now, if you, chas shalom, were in a hospital and you had serious digestive issues and your colon wasn't functioning and you couldn't drink, and then after 6 weeks in the hospital, all of a sudden you could get back to using, you would really appreciate this cup of coffee, right? But you don't have to have those experiences to do this. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, it's like, I find it a little hard, because like, yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. You know, you take a second to say, like, oh, I'm having a cup of coffee, you know, while teaching. But at the same time, like, I could be in like, the dorms and pick up an apple and not think any differently other than I'm eating an apple.
So there's an easy one. There's an easy one. I'll tell you my personal opinion. I learned this from Israelite students. I was much less aware of this before I came to Israelite, because in the yeshiva world, like, everybody's frum and you're doing it, but you're not really thinking about it. It's a problem in the world of yeshiva, usually, right? Because we take things for granted. It's like, if you get married, okay? Bezrat Hashem, we're going to be celebrating something like that soon, I hope, in this community, our community, right? So when that person gets married, the week that he's first married, I can still go back to this. Like, when you're first married and you leave the house in the morning, right, and you say goodbye, right, or you come home at the end of the day and you say hello, and, like, it hits you, like, you're married. Like, this person's in your life. You've made this decision. It's unbelievable to come home at the end of the day just to say hello. But now I'm married, Baruch Hashem, 20 years, right? I'm Baruch Hashem, I'm married 20 years. I can't tell you that every time I walk in the door and I see my wife, I have that hello that I had the first week I was married. But I'll tell you two things. One is, there isn't a week that goes by that I don't decide that I'm going to experience that hello. It's worth that effort. Some people can do it every moment. Some people can do it every day. I make sure it happens very often. And that's why that hello... No. So Chazal, Maran Brachos, Torah L'Moshe Mitzinai, says you're right. It's so easy to lose that with an apple. And such a gift if you can do that with an apple. So they give you a vehicle. And that's called a bracha. Do you remember at the beginning of the year? And by the way, if I could pick the mitzvah that's probably the easiest mitzvah out there to do, it's brachot. A bracha is so easy. Right? All you have to do is say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Borei Pri Haaretz. And maybe if you add a piece, you take 30 seconds over the bracha, or 20 seconds over the bracha, or a thought process as you're about to make a bracha, so it costs you 10 seconds, right? The instant payoff, the return for experiencing a bracha, right? You don't have to wait. It's not like putting on tefillin where you have to struggle with it. It's not like keeping kosher that you have to learn a lot to understand it. Bracha is obvious. Like, if you take a moment, right? Like, how many people in this world sit down and just eat an apple and they don't realize what a gift it is to have an apple? They don't stop to think about that. They don't realize how many people there are in this world that wish they could have an apple. They don't realize how blessed they are that they can even eat an apple. You could spend an hour contemplating all the gifts and eating an apple. So most people are not on that level, right? But I told you about the Amshanavan, right? That he stopped benching. Did I tell you this, right? Oh, we talked about this. I don't remember. There's a great Rebbe here called the Amshanavan Rebbe. Rav Natan Siegel, who's going to be visiting you, knows him well. Rabbi Aaron has met him. I went to see him once. He's like one of the Gedolim. Like, you know, in fact, he's one of those that I'm hoping we can get you guys to meet. I don't know if it'll work out. Last year it didn't. But he stopped eating bread. The reason he stopped eating bread is because when he benches, it takes hours. And he started to realize that people were waiting for him. And he felt terrible that he was...
Shabbos?
Pardon?
Even on Shabbos?
Even though he stopped eating bread. I don't know the details. Inshallah, mashallah, you don't have to know the details, right? He stopped eating bread, right? Because his benching takes so long. And he didn't want people waiting for him while he benches. His Avodas Hashem shouldn't come to expensive people. Just a story like that. They will not be telling stories like that about me. I don't believe I'm ever going to get to that level. Maybe that's a mistake not to believe you can get to that level. But I can tell you that my bracha is different than it used to be. Pardon? Yeah, I know. It's a problem. Don't go there before he has pretzels, right? But you understand? In other words, you can decide, and every time you make a bracha, because remember what we said at the beginning of the year, that the word levarech is to increase, right? And that what you're doing when you make a bracha is you're increasing the presence of Hashem in your life, right? If a person's really saying brachos, I had a Rebbe used to say in Gush, he used to say he could walk into the Beis Medrash, look at his guys and know who davened. He could just see it. He could see who had a serious davening, who didn't. He didn't tell us, but whatever. You know, and I thought about that. I don't really look at life through those lenses. But I can tell you that I feel the difference when I have a serious davening. Because if you can do that with one bracha, imagine what you can do if you do that over the course of an hour, libriot with tefillah. You're just in a different space. You should be in a different space, yeah. Absolutely. The Karliners daven like that. There are certain Hasidim who daven fast because they find that staying in Kavana when you're in a slow tefillah is much more difficult. Because thoughts are coming in and you're thinking about the business and the stock market and the friend who did this. So you run through. Like if you don't want to be distracted by things in town, I don't know, let's say you're the type of person that when you see girls walking around in the summer, it plays with your mind. You start to think all sorts of things. Let's say you decide to, so there's lots of things you could do. You could not go to town. You could take your glasses off when you go to town. I had a Rebbe, whatever, of Medan. That's what he used to do. He used to go to town. If he had to go to town, he would take his glasses off. It bothered him to see certain things. Whatever, I'm not on that level, whatever. Or you could run through town. It's harder to be sort of impacted when you're running, right? So that's what they do. They run through Shemoneh Esrei. I tried that a couple of times. I couldn't do that. I just lost my Shemoneh Esrei. But yeah, you can't judge the value of Shemoneh. That's a big mistake people make. You know, you can't judge the value of a Shemoneh Esrei based on how long it takes. There could be one person here who has an unbelievable davening experience, but he's the first one done. There could be a guy who finishes last, right? And it's because he's struggling. He's having a really hard time getting into davening. We have no idea. You know, like, that's a big mistake. Like, it happens to be that very often you find that they're, well, whatever, that's a whole other discussion. But you understand the question, right? So, and that's true for everything. You know, you decide what to do. But I think the first stage, you see, yesterday, we'll finish with this. Yesterday we were talking about these crossroads that come into your life all the time, right? So what's the biggest problem? People think the biggest problem is that you go to the left instead of the right. That's a problem. Sometimes the problem is you don't realize you're at a crossroads. You keep running straight and smack into a tree. You know, I mean, do you recognize that you're at a crossroads? Like everything is a crossroads. And if you decide you're at a crossroads, if you decide you have this opportunity, if I was sitting with someone who had no relationship with Judaism, and they asked me, where should I start? I would unequivocally tell them, start with brachot. Start with brachos. We used to have an Israelite program, we would always share with them the value and the beauty of brachot. And you would see sometimes students would sit and they would want to know the bracha for this and the bracha for that. And it was inspiring. Like, you know, you get used to, look, I made a bracha on the cup of coffee. I didn't go, like, pardon? Right. But I've been around people who do that, and it inspires you, and it impacts your davening. So that's a whole other discussion. All right. There's still a lot more. Yeah?
If someone does that, maybe for a couple words, like that's kind of interesting. But after a minute, you can just get annoyed at that person.
No, that's a different. The yeshivas movo, right? You know, you walk in the first day and say, make a bracha for me. That's the interview, right? Make a bracha. Okay. That's different, you know. You're not accepted. I hear it. It's interesting. But I think that you also have to have a really healthy balance. Look, there was a time that there were things that I did during davening, and I didn't realize they annoyed people, right? Like, I love to sing. That's just, everybody has their neshama. So, and I used to find that getting into davening, it helped me to get into davening when I would do a niggun. Right? So I would... I didn't realize when I was doing the Salon Shmoneh Esrei, right? By the way, one of the reasons that I know Shmoneh Esrei by heart is because way back when, I was doing them to niggunim. So you can do that with things, but that's a whole other discussion. So once somebody came over to me, and whatever, it was clear to me from his question that I was davening a little too loud for him. And I thought about that a lot. Like, if my davening is coming at someone else's expense, that's a real problem. So I worked really hard not to be davening out loud in Salat Shmoneh Esrei, which is it's an interesting problem, because it's more important to me personally. This is just my speed. But I think this is an objective value. If your Avodas Hashem comes at someone else's expense, that's a problem. But there's a limit to that. In other words, suppose somebody gets annoyed just because you're davening. So I'm not going to not daven. I'll go as far as I can. Like when I'm on a plane, right? I can't daven. Like sometimes they have those minyanim in the back. I try very hard not to fly on Mondays and Thursdays. I don't want to miss Kriyas HaTorah. And I try very hard not to daven with a minyan on the plane. I fly. I take the 1 a.m. at night. I land at 6 in the morning. I don't daven on the plane. I'm done with Maran for Iran. I do, because you inevitably are davening next to someone. You have no way of knowing if you're annoying this person. The person likes to sit in the seat, and you're like doing this next to it. It's a problem, right? And I find I can't daven, and I certainly can't daven b'kavana. I would rather daven yachid. It's an interesting question, lalacha, by the way. So this is not a psak halacha. But I would rather daven on my own in a place where I'm not disturbing anyone than be in the back with a minion, davening next to some lady who's getting more and more annoyed because she doesn't understand why these Jews are taking over the world, right? But that's a serious issue. So that's if you're doing this, you know, so you have to be sensitive to the world around you. On the other hand, you can, if you're the person being annoyed, that's a different story, because now you have the opportunity to become part of a healthier community where you realize that you have something to gain from the person and not be annoyed by it. But all right, food for thought.
Start putting in the shoes inside the
I know, that'll be cool. That'll happen. We'll have it like...